This is a paid message from GoFundMe.
My name's Ashley Kane. I'm the daddy of a little girl in heaven and a father to two boys on earth. I've got an incredible relationship with GoFundMe, both personally and via my daughter's foundation, the Azalea Foundation. GoFundMe has allowed me, the foundation, and thousands of people out there to give hope to others in need. You'd actually be surprised how many people out there are willing to show love and support you in your time of need. My advice for anyone that needs to start up a GoFundMe would be do it. You don't need to feel shame. You don't need to feel guilt. You don't need to feel embarrassment. If you need GoFundMe, use GoFundMe.
Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This message reflects one person's experience.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Josh Norris, another Baseball America Prospect podcast. We covered Florida last week. So this week, we have Josh Norris and Jesus Cano with us. Josh just got back from Arizona. Jesus is in Phoenix all the time. But they were hitting the backfields, hitting the spring breakout games, hitting everything of spring training in Arizona, especially with an emphasis on the prospects. Josh is working right now on his magnum opus, where he will basically unveil after talking to scouts, a gazillion names of players who stood out in spring training on the backfields, prospects focused. And Josh, great to see you. And welcome back. What was your Arizona spring training trip like this time? A little hotter than normal, I think, for March.
A lot hotter than normal. It was the hottest March in the history of the state. So, but I've been there during June. It's the same thing. It was completely tolerable. I'll take that over, 95 and humid in Florida any day of the week. So it was, wear pants outside and it's 109 and still fine. The only thing I would do differently is I wish I would ever remember to put a towel in my bag to put on some of the seats, because, most of the scouts sit way up top where there's shade, and I can't do that because I need to do my camera work. So there were some times where your boy was getting cooked.
Second or third degree burns to be avoided. Those seats get a little bit warm. But we're going to dive straight in, and we got a couple of questions to ask you. Ask the same questions to Jesus. And the first one, I want to start off with a pretty easy one, because you saw a lot of top 100 caliber prospects out there. But is there someone among that group, or a couple of guys, if there are, who stood out, like, even though you knew, like, they're a top 100 prospect already, they're a guy who we already are much like, this is one of the better prospects in the game. But is anyone who really jumped out as like, oh, but this guy's even a little bit better than I thought coming in, or stood out?
Yeah, and full disclosure, I did both Arizona and Florida, so I'll probably just stick to Arizona, but I might bleed some Florida into there.
Sure.
Ryan Sloan was, I'll just put it flatly, he's the best pitcher I'm going to see all year. There's no chance anybody eclipses what I saw. Was it three or four innings? It checks every box, every single one of them. It's power, it's physicality, it's fastball, it's fastball life, it's command, it's spin. He can cut it, he can sink it. He can land the slider, he can sweep it away, and he's out there with the mindset of just dispose of these hitters as quickly as possible.
You've seen him before. Has he, like, was it a step forward from when you've seen before?
Maybe a little, but, like, last year, really good before. It was the same animal. Like, I've said it before, he's going to pitch in the big leagues for 15 years, and it's going to be at the top of a rotation. There's not a question in my mind. If he stays healthy, which is the caveat with every person and player in the history of man.
But especially pitchers.
Full disclosure, I wrote a story a little bit ago about who could be the next Jacob Mizierowski. And in our content management system, I had Ryan Sloan's name written. It was done. I woke up at like 3 a.m. and said, he's only got like 3 games above high A. It's probably too far at this point. And I replaced him with Cade Anderson. Well, I don't know when you're seeing this, but today on Monday, he was the break camp roster was announced for AA, and there he is. So he's going to get big outs. If the Mariners are in the playoffs, he's going to be on that roster. And I think he's got a good, I picked them to win the World Series. I think he's going to be a good part of that.
Like you said, you saw Cade Anderson as well. in that game, if I remember right, right? Because mm-hmm. they're both in the breakout.
He pitched back to back.
Nothing against Cade Anderson, but it did seem like that Ryan Sloan's just at another level.
He's another animal entirely. Like, it's, you know, I saw, like, I think it's 14 or 15 top 100 prospects, and he's the best. It's not particularly close. Number two is Seth Hernandez. Cade would be somewhere in the middle there, but you just, there's not a whole lot of hitters in the minor leagues that are going to challenge Ryan Sloan at this point. And they got another one, man. They got another pitcher.
Like you said, double A assignment. If you start the season in double A and you stay healthy, hard to imagine you won't be in the big leagues at some point.
You started in double A after three high A starts because, you know, obviously you had the eye thing last year that cut your season a little short, but it's a monster. It's a future top of the rotation starter.
And a guy who should be getting outs, like you said, in the big leagues at some point this year. And the double A assignment is aggressive, but at the same time, from what you've described, it also seems like it'd be one of those things where it's like, okay, how much further development are you going to get in high A, where he's going to overpower some hitters in double A, but double A is going to give him at least a little bit more of a test there, right? Because that's more advanced hitters.
You say that it's funny because like that particular high A where he would have gone, the numbers would have been a little more unsightly because Everett's a really small park. Like it's like 340 to the alleyways. And the Texas League where he's going is not, well, there are some hitters parks. He's in the Texas League. There are some hitters parks, but you know, if they don't hit the ball, you can't do damage. And I don't expect them to let them hit the ball very often.
The Travelers are going to be well-suited to have him and Cade Anderson.
And I think Lazaro Montes.
And not that Arkansas hasn't been, I was going to say, that's a team that's been very fortunate over the last 5 years, I think you could say. Like,
yeah. When you talk about the premier pitching development organizations in the country, you can't not talk about the Mariners. Look at their big league rotation. It's like, I mean, I guess Emerson Hancock was pretty good the other night too, but it's like five homegrown guys and Luis Castillo.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going to add Cade Anderson to that mix. Ryan Sloan. Well, Cade Anderson too, but we're talking about Ryan Sloan. I think, you know, Nolan McClain just graduated. We did a piece on, you know, who's going to be the next number one, you know, pitching prospect in the minor leagues. I think he's the best non-debuted pitching prospect in the minor leagues. In the minor leagues, I guess the way I could qualify it, because Painter's in the big leagues and he might have pitched, but this gets to air. Trey Savage is still going to count for a little while longer.
But he's been in the big leagues. He's been in the
World Series. Yeah, but he's got less big league time than you think, just because he's got more big league time in the postseason. I think he'll be the number one pitching prospect in the sport by, you know, early June, just the way the mechanics might work about it.
And I would say with that, like you mentioned Seth Hernandez, I do think it's going to be easy for Ryan Sloan to be ahead of Seth Hernandez when we do this, when we update, because Seth Hernandez, very impressive, but Ryan Sloan, several steps closer, you know.
Mm.
But that's another fun
one. They're very close. Those ceilings are the only reason I would go Sloan pretty definitively right now is because there's a little more to do with the body with Seth. There's a little more refinement to do on the breaking stuff, but they're going to have similar ceilings. Like, that's not a question to me. I think I saw him better than you guys did. Like, I saw him versus Caminiti on the back, and I know 102. I don't really care about that. It was go and blow. Like, he was sitting comfortably at 96, 98, and that changeup was, you know, taking the souls of some poor Braves DSL hitters. The breaking stuff was okay, but I mean, I had one scout say, you know, put an 80 on him this past week.
I will say with Seth, I cannot wait to see, like, I feel like that we're just seeing the ground floor right here. And we were talking about him and saying, kind of looking at him and saying, okay, so here's where he is right now, but imagine him throwing eventually, if you count the cutter as a fastball, essentially, imagine him throwing three fastballs one day where you're going to be worrying about that and you'll be worried about that and you're worried about that. And then imagine him, you know, like, again, refining the breaking ball to go with the changeup. And all of a sudden, we're going to be talking about, again, because he's still basically, he'll be one of the younger pitchers in full season ball this year.
I don't know where he's going to go. I assume it's Bradenton, but hopefully it's Greensboro in short order for greed's sake.
Both will want to be making that trip. But okay, well, that's the top 100 side. this is where it gets more fun. And this is where I know you spend a lot of time and have a lot more fun. Because, yes, you saw Ryan Sloan great. You love seeing great prospects. But you love finding the guys who are a little bit further off the radar. And I'll ask you with that. And I know this will be more than one probably. But who are some non-top 100 prospects who really caught your eye? And, again, you're doing a lot of reporting right now as well, who stood out, you know, in your conversations as well.
You know, one that really jumps out is Nate Snead with the Angels. And, you know, it's interesting. In my reporting, like, there's been a lot of Tennessee guys who've come up. Marcus Phillips came up as a really, really high-end pitching prospect. I'm feeling pretty good about that. Tanner Franklin, sounds like he was the best Tennessee prospect in the Cardinals spring breakout game.
He was better than Liam Doyle. I mean, it wasn't close that
day. I think there's a world where Liam Doyle is like the fourth or fifth best Tennessee prospect to come out of this draft class. Like the other guys are, they're got some now stuff, man. Nate Snead threw a sinker so vicious that the guy fouled it off his own face. He's got three fastballs. They all move. It's high effort. You know, you're probably riding the line between starter and bullpen. The slider is filthy. He comes right at you, and he's just going to blow it by you. They're going to obviously keep him as a starter for now, and they're going to Tri-City's going to have one of the best rotations in the minors.
Hold on. Let's stop for a second there and just acknowledge for the good news that is for Tri-City, because it was not that long ago that Tri-City was basically, it was like, wait, why do they all go to Rocket City? We're here too.
Right. And it's tricky. I don't know that that's their assignment, but I think that's their assignment based on where they were finishing the year and talked to their pitching coordinator on the backfield and stuff like that. But, you know, it's nasty stuff, man. He's really, really, really good. Brought up Marcus Phillips on the backfields of Florida. You know, it's a loose-armed right-hander with low slot and big extension and big velocity. He can sweep it. He can land it. There's a little bit of a changeup in there. He can four-seam it too. It was a great get by the Volunteers to pick him up out of a JC in Iowa, and then the Red Sox did a great job scooping him up. You know, I talked to some people at Area Code games last year who that was their favorite arm on that staff, and that's certainly what I saw in 3 days in Tennessee last year. Like, Doyle was great, but this one was better for me at least. Another guy who came up, James Tibbs. We can talk about him too.
Oh, and he's already had a great start to his AAA season, a 2-home run game already.
Yeah. They made some mechanical tweaks with him, and the guy I know talked to guys who have been around him or have had history with him with past organizations. And they say he's a little different. There's more intent in the swing, and it's really showing up. I mean, it's interesting. They're probably going to have to, like, it's a corner or first base profile, and probably just by necessity, because they've got so many outfielders coming up. That's like the glut of Dodgers prospects at this point are outfielders. So he might be a first baseman, but he's going to have the bat to bang over that position just fine. I mean, it is spring training, and he was not facing the greatest pitching in the history of man, but you saw he did it twice in like opening day or 2 days of opening day, whatever. First series.
Yeah, against it was over the first weekend. It wasn't opening day, but over the first weekend, he had a 2-home run game, both to center field, by the way, also like straight center. It was
The one that I put on my Twitter was not cheap. It was, and I was lucky I got it in the beautiful slow-mo version.
Which you're watching on the YouTube as we are talking about it here.
Oh, yeah. We'll probably put that there. There's another one who I'm going to look at my notes here that I found out about today who was pretty good. Shocking of all shocks, but the Brewers have a pop-up prospect who can pitch. Where is he? Jason Woodward, Florida Gulf Coast, coming off of Tommy John. He was 94-96 with ride and a plus-plus changeup and a new cutter. Breaking ball's kind of loose, but he carved in the outing that this particular scout saw. Solid delivery, maybe a little bit, you can maybe fix it a little bit, but there's a good live arm there, and I can think of not too many better guys than organizations than the Brewers to find young arms like that. The third name I'll give you is Justin Campbell from the Guardians. Now, here's how long it's been since for Justin Campbell. He was college teammates with Nolan McLean. Since then, Nolan McLean has made his debut, pitched in the World Baseball Classic, and exhausted his prospect eligibility. Nope, Justin Campbell has not thrown an official pro pitch yet. But I saw found two scouts who saw him, and the first words out of their mouth were, damn, on both of them. So, yeah, this is...
Say this for the Guardians.
Yeah, they are willing... Did I not mention that?
I was going to say, I'm just saying this for the Guardians. They are patient. Because Daniel Espino and Justin Campbell, it's like, you know what? We're willing to wait. And by the way, when you say like about Justin Campbell, I wrote about Justin Campbell when I saw him for 15 USA, 15 U, which probably was a decade ago now, but it's also probably only about 150 innings ago because he was also a two-way player at Oklahoma State. I've always liked him as a prospect, but there was a long and long recovery from injury here, but it is great to hear that he is back to being what he looked to be when he was drafted many years ago now.
I mean, here's what we got on him. 6'7", 220 with big stuff, upper 90s with swing and miss, flash two good breaking balls, three legit weapons. Already 25 without any pro experience. Operation was fine. Turned over a changeup okay. Only fair cutter, but he's got five pitches and maybe he might be Rule 5 eligible, which is kind of insane to think about.
He is a 2022 supplemental first rounder. So basically you got 22, 23, 24, 25. So that was that. So next year, it'll be easy. This is an easy protection, you know.
Yeah. And then I'll give you another Oklahoma State guy. His name is Gabe Davis. He's with the White Sox. And I found two guys who saw him in just two innings, you know, 96, 99 with some nasty breaking stuff. Doesn't have an official pro inning yet, but he's one to watch. There's a couple sleepers in that White Sox camp.
But that leads into the next question, because I think you have a couple of answers for this as well. I know one answer when you talk about Nate Sneed. Is there an organization whose farm system talent exceeded your expectations in spring training? That's the Angels, isn't it? Or is that one of them? At least?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely the Angels. Like, you know, I saw their breakout game just because, you know, the way that heat wave in Arizona was kind of blessing in disguise because I was not scheduled to go to that game, but they kept it at early. And then my game was late Reds Giants.
And you will double up if you can, you will triple.
I have like 6 hours in between. So I went to that game and like they rolled out, you know, Dylan Jordan, Nate Sneed, Najir Victor, who,
if you watch baseball classic star,
or Arizona or Fall League, you decide which is more important.
We just said that was perfect. You had your reason that you would love him, and I had mine. So it's great.
Mid upper 90s cutters will do that to you. They rolled out those guys, Trey Gregory, Alford. It's like they've got arm talent. Hayden Alvarez in center field has gotten better. That's there. There's some guys that have gone backwards. Gabriel Davalio, he does not seem like he's going in the correct direction for a lot of reasons.
Guy can hit, but there's positional concerns are getting louder and louder.
Yeah, but the point is they're going to have some pitching at the lower levels, man. I don't know how many of them are big league starters. We didn't even talk about Tyler Bremner and Chase Shores, mostly because I didn't see them, but heard good things, you know, but there's a lot of stuff cooking in that camp. Any others that really exceeded expectations?
I would say White Sox is another one that, I mean, it's not shocking now, but stands out to me a little bit from.
It's one of those three. It's not fresh on my mind because most of the guys I didn't see myself, like then the White Sox that I did see in camp or in that breakout game were not good. They were bad, in fact.
That was one of the teams that was like, there is a strike zone. Why does it feel like it's moving around and no one can throw it?
There's 27 combined walks in that game. It took a while. I thought we were going to run out of pitchers and have to call that early. But
I thought you were going to run out of baseballs, maybe.
Yeah, Zach Root. Well, they don't leave the park. They just go in the catcher's mitt. I mean, you know, 3.5 hours of open side footage edited down to 47 seconds. But, you know, they had some guys that just didn't have their best day. It happened. I think Christian Opor is probably better than what I saw. It's hard to not be, but they've got Billy Carlson. It's been pretty good reviews on Billy. Even with the bat, like there's some interesting there. And we, you know, Sam Antonacci, this is a different animal than what he was last year. He's bigger and stronger. Last year, it was like a scrappy dappy dude who's going to get to the big leagues and carve out a nice cup of coffee. Now it's like, okay, this guy might bang enough to be a regular or at least a part-timer or a second division regular. Question about where you're going to play, but it's a lot of different stuff there. You saw that in the World Baseball Classic, and you saw it in the, I think you started well, like everybody else has, in the Charlotte series. And then there's another one. William Bergoglio was kind of, I took a lot of ribbing for having him as high on the Phillies list as I did early in his career. I'm starting to look smart. Like, this guy can make contact with a lot of stuff. It's not going to be any power, but you know, he can get to 99 and dump it into left field or what have you, and he can play on the infield. So there's some stuff there. I'll give another name that I has nothing to do with the other teams, but one of my favorites from the Cleveland system is Dowry Fernandez. That dude can hit. Like, it's not going to be big time power because he's super narrow framed, but he got 99 and redirected it into left field. He can turn and burn too, like, and stay up the middle. He's a fun little player. He seems to be separating himself from that little, that younger middle infield pack that the Guardians have on their side.
So that Charlotte team, I will say, it looks good, and no fan base. I mean, not white. I'm getting really granular here. No fan base deserves that more than fans in Charlotte, because the Charlotte Knights have been terrible year after year after year after year. Now, I know wins and losses at the minor league level are not that important, but
not for what we do.
But if you're a fan going to games, you kind of like to see your team win. And Charlotte, pretty much a normal year is they're 20 games under 500. They're 30 games under 500. They have not had a winning record in the 2020s. They've had one winning record since 2016, one year where they ended up above 500. They started out 3-0 with like a sub-2 ERA. They're outscored their opponent 25-6. They have a pitching staff that looks really intriguing. They have actual, like you said, you just said Antonacci and Bergoglio and all. They have hitters. Hey, the AAA Charlotte Knights actually looking like a feisty team. It's been a while.
Yeah, even if they're, and this is the constant complaint I have about the Knights, why is your mascot a dragon? That is the enemy of the Knight. Doesn't make any sense.
They've come to a peaceful coexistence agreement.
You know? I don't buy it. There's no detente here.
Dogs and cats living together.
Yes.
You know.
You don't have a Matador as the Durham mascot.
But you know, but there's going to be so much. We're excited. We've got the minor league season here, and we're going to be going to a whole lot of games and watching a whole lot of MILB TV and producing a whole lot of content and video from that. And we'll be doing that all season. So we're looking forward to that. That was Josh. We're going to do the same thing after the break with Jesus Cano as well. So we'll be right back right after this quick break.
This one's for the dudes looking for that peak bedroom performance. Blue Chew just dropped their newest innovation, Blue Chew Gold.
Blue Chew is the number one chewable ED brand. And yes, Blue Chew Gold dissolves under your tongue and works in as little as 15 minutes. Peak passion and peak performance in a single tablet. See why millions of men trust Blue Chew now with a gold standard upgrade that is changing the game for good. Make life easier and discover your options at BlueChew.com. And we have a special deal for the FT fam. Get 10% off your first month of Blue Chew Gold with code FOUL. That's promo code FOUL. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast. This is the future of performance. Faster, smarter, and precision engineered for results. Two ingredients for blood flow with apomorphine and oxytocin to turn up the arousal and connection in your brain and body. It's Blue Chew.
And we're back. And as you can see, Josh Norris has left us, and we have been joined by Jesus Cano, who has been living on the backfields in Arizona, because while Josh was making the trip out there, for Jesus, for you, that's just every day, you know, because this is what you do as our Phoenix-based correspondent. But so take me through. This is year two of you prowling the backfields during spring training for us in Arizona. Before we dive into the prospects, how is it different year two from year one?
You know, I feel like year one is obviously you're learning the ropes of things. You know, I have, you know, a background covering the Diamondbacks, have at MLB.com and covering high school sports. So I have covered different sports to different levels and also worked with younger players. But I think specifically on the baseball development standpoint and just with everything that goes with on the backfields, it's a lot. It can be overstimulating. You know, it's like my cat Zoe when there's like more than three people in my apartment. You know, it can be quite a lot bit. But I think after that first year, you know, you talk to a lot of people, you get to know a lot of the people, the same people who are, you know, they're getting TrackMan data, the same coaches, the same players too at some point, like they recognize you and everything becomes a lot more familiar. And I think the other thing for me too is just like understanding the game more, because while I've been a fan of baseball, I didn't play it growing up. I played soccer growing up, you know, but baseball's always been the sport that I've been watching, and just learning everything that goes into, you know, what makes a good pitcher, what adjustments does a pitcher need to make to be able to do, how does data that we, you know, get provided to, you know, affect and come into play, and how are you able to see that type of stuff. So I think going into year two, I was able to identify talent that stood out to me right away, rather than just relying on what scouts were saying or somebody saying, hey, this guy could be good. I think this was the time, and you've seen it, I think, in our Arizona backfield intel. I talked about, you know, Jose Fernandez, and then Jose Fernandez ended up getting called up to the D-backs after just three at-bats in AAA, and, you know, and plenty of experience down in Double A and High A. So I think that's been the biggest thing, and there's just been so much talent. And it's, you know, I needed to take some rest, because obviously you don't want to deal with burnout beginning of the season. But even when I was home, you know, I felt like I needed to restrain myself from going out there, because there's just so much to see, so much to do, and so much to learn back there, whether you're just a fan of the game, want to become a scout, or in my position, want to be able to deliver the best news and just more insight about what's going on in the backfields.
So, same as we did with Josh, we'll dive right in. And so who is a top tier? Who's a top 100 prospect? Someone who is absolutely 100% on even the more casual prospect radar. Someone who stood out to you.
Yeah, and I think the best way to lead to talk about this guy is, you know, the anecdote that I gave a couple of weeks ago when I talked about him is the fact that, you know, you and I mean, we were in Atlanta. Crazy how things come full circle. We were in Atlanta. You know, coming back from the Futures game, I flew out that Monday and I was going to use that Tuesday to rest, right? It was a long trip. I had also just come back from Alaska like 10 days before, so I'd only spent like 2 days at home. And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to use it. And then I get a message from Josh, actually, that's like, hey, Kendry Chirio is going to pitch tomorrow. And I'm like, all right, that sounds good. The complex league games at the time, you know, at this point, Kendry Chirio was pitching in the Dominican Summer League, 17 years old, stateside, and just absolutely dominated, was by far potentially the best player at the time in the Dominican Summer League, and they decided to boo him up. And I was like, okay, the complex league happens, you know, at 6 p.m. I'll have some time to rest. No, that game was at 11 a.m. in 116 degree weather. So I was like, well, dang, I cannot go see this guy. And it was worth it, seeing everything as advertised. It was the Royals against the Reds down in Goodyear. And just immediately when I start seeing him pitch, I was like, wow, this guy is different. This guy's 17 years old. I think not, but that was the case at the time. And just the way that he was able to show high octane stuff at the time, hitting 95, 96, you know, with the fastball at just 17, and an international prospect, no less, you know. And I think it was really interesting to see him make that jump right away. And obviously he, from there, you know, after the ACL was over, he went over to low A with the Columbia Fireflies, and, you know, had a little bit of a learning curve there, but I think performed in one of their playoff games. It kind of really showed his maturity and prowess at the time. And then, you know, he was obviously the guy I was most excited to see. And just Kendry Chirio has continued to be amazing from the moment that I saw him pitch. I mean, the fastball at his age, you know, I think it's 96, 97, can touch 98 at times, which is so impressive to do. But the way he's able to do it is, you know, pound the strike zone. At the end of the day, it's what it is. You know, a lot it's of really guys control. His age are going to have, yeah, really good control. And then his curveball, I mean, it is just, it's high spin with a fading, and it has a fading changeup to go along with it. But I mean, the curveball just gets so much whiff. It's such in a really good spot. And I mean, this guy has the making of it. I mean, he's going to be 18 years old. He's going to start in low A, you know. I don't expect him to kind of have a, you know, meteoric, you know, push the way he's been able to do it so far. But I mean, his delivery, you know, and he's such a quiet guy, like a very, very quiet guy, you know, very reserved to himself, but it seems like he turns into a completely different person when he's on the mound. And I mean, this is a guy that I'm excited to kind of see develop. And, you know, there's still there's still improvements with any other prospect that needs to be made. You know, I know we wrote a story recently about Baseball America. You know, I think after the first week of spring, after spring breakout is where we talked about who could be the next pitchers, the best pitching prospect in the game. Mm-hmm. And obviously Hernandez was one of the guys mentioned and stuff like that. And I wrote about Churio, but I think Churio has plenty of other work to do before he'd be able to reach that. But at the end of the day, being behind Seth Hernandez and a couple of those guys in pitching prospect rankings, it's not a bad thing to be at all whatsoever. He's just great player.
So he's a top 100 prospect that we expect to see take even further steps forward, and which, considering his age, you know, and the fact that he really just got to full season ball at the end of last year for the Royals.
And the big thing too, JJ, like, not to interrupt you, but what I think needs to happen for Churio this year is while the fastball is high octane, there's not a lot of swing and miss that comes with the fastball. I know there's a little bit of riding life, you know, with the fastball, but in the time that I've ever seen him, it doesn't get a lot of whiffs. You know, I think batters are able to kind of foul off of it and maybe, you know, catch looking and stuff like that. But in the spring breakout game, I think out of all the fastball games he threw, there was only one whiff on the ball. A majority of that whiff came from the curveball, obviously. So I think that's just another thing, is to find a way to be able to give a little bit more ride and a little bit more movement with that fastball to kind of be able to garner a little bit, because obviously it's going to be his main pitch. And I mean, he's 17 right now, 96, 97. I mean, by the time he's 20, 21, it could be 98, 99. And that's cool and all, but at the end of the day, a lot of other pitchers are throwing that fast, right? And if you just have a straight fastball that just goes right away straight at you as a hitter, it's going to be easy to get that compared to one that has a little bit of movement. So I think that's the next step he needs to take in order to kind of become like that top tier pitching prospect.
So that's a good note about Royals prospect Henry Churio, but we also are going to go beyond the top 100 other players. And when I said this to you and said, who do you want to talk about? One of these guys is a guy that you've been very much talking about, I feel like, for the last year. But there's a certain Rockies prospect that comes to mind.
Of course, of course. And we're talking about Roldy Brito. I mean, the kid can flat out hit. And when I wrote a story about him, I believe in November, you know, I was asking a couple pitchers around the complex league that that had faced him. And one pitcher, you know, I asked him in Spanish, and I'll give you guys the Spanish translation and everything. I asked him, hey, what makes Kendry Churio so hard to go up? I'm not Kendry Churio, my bad. What makes Roldy Brito so hard to go up against when you're pitching against him? And this pitcher said, ese loco es muy, muy, muy bueno en verdad. In translating, it means that crazy dude is really, really good in legit, you know, in everything, in all aspects of it, right? And when it means crazy dude, it means that it's a term of endearment in Dominican and Latin culture, right? And I think the thing with Brito at the end of the day, you know, he can really hit. I mean, that's what it comes down to. He's such a disciplined switch hitter. I remember seeing him for the first time in the complex league last year. And I think the cream of the crop heading into that team was Ashley Andujar, who was the team's top international signing, same class as Roldy Brito. And there was plenty of other players there, but there was nobody quite a hitter quite like Brito in the way that he's able to just hit, make contact with the ball in the zone, you know. And you know, the EBs for his age group at the time I think were average, but I think there's also different tools that come into set with them too. His speed, you know, at the time his speed was rated as a 70. I mean, in the DSL some people were saying it was an 80. We gave him a 70, and it's a true weapon, you know. I think when he was playing second base, it really helped his mobility, and when they decided to put him out in center field, the speed was a big reason, because they knew that he'd be able to cover the ground and he'd be able to hit long term to be in that position. I think one thing that we've seen about him a little bit too, and this is something that I touched up in our backfield intel story, was the fact that, you know, he's gotten bigger. You know, I talked to him, you know, first game, and you know, he told me that he had gotten measured at 6'1", and yes, he did get measured at 6'1" because he's taller. I mean, I'm like 5'11", 6', depending on what day I want to say. So he's definitely added a little bit size, and I think with that, we're going to see a little bit more pop come into his game. You know, he has right here now has gap to gap pop, I would say, but I think also too is he has the potential to turn that gap to gap pop into over the fence power. He's not going to be a guy that's going to slug 25, 30 home runs and makes it this appealing slugger that a lot of people talk about. But I think as he continues to develop and get a lot more barrels on the ball, I think it's potentially that see that you can see 15 to 20 from a guy that can lead off and play really good defensively. But I think with that said too, I think as he continues to get bigger, I think the speed's going to go down a little bit, which isn't bad at all. I mean, a 60 grade speed at any level is impressive to do so. And especially with a guy that's able to get on base like he does. But I think the other thing too, JJ, is one area of improvement that Brito does need to do. It's like, I think I'd seen him try to steal stolen base attempts like 5 or 6 times, and he's been thrown out in every single one of them. And I think that's just one area his instincts need to get a little bit better in, because it's starting, you know, that's either obviously pushing him to steal more bases and stuff like that's a top of the order guy. But I think that's one area where this season coming in low A Fresno for him is he's going to need to be able to kind of do that a little bit, just because, you know, it's an important part of his game. But this guy, my bold prediction, you know, is I wouldn't be surprised if Roldy Brito, A, by the end of the year, you know, at some point this year, he's going to be a top 100 prospect. I firmly believe he's going to be a top 100 prospect. And the other thing, too, I wouldn't be surprised if he has a chance to be the top prospect in the Rockies system, depending how both Charlie Condon and Ethan Holliday fare out at the beginning of the year, and how things transpire. You know, I really believe in the tools that he has. You know, he was the first player that I got to see last year, and I felt like it was kind of a discovery for me early on where I was like, whoa, this is what a good ball player looks like compared to a lot of people in the complex league. And you know what? When he got up to the low A Fresno, it was the same thing, if not even better, and the production was up there. But like with typical Rockies prospects that we need to be able to talk about here is that production needs to be continued, because we can talk about Brito, we can talk about Wilder Dalles, we can talk about Ashley Andujar and Christian Arguez, who's making a stateside debut from the DSL, who was the MVP last year. But we can also talk about different players like Adel Amador, right? We could talk about Yankiel Fernandez. We could talk about, you know, a lot of other international players that have come up, have done good in those lower levels, Robert Collins, Kelvin Hidalgo being one of those other two, and just kind of floundered a little bit in low A. The progression is going to be key to be able to put them up into an upper echelon, because I think there's just so much potential with Roldy Brito right now.
We can't limit you to just one. So who's another guy who stands out to you, who's jumped out this spring?
Yeah, the one guy on the A's I was very excited to watch was Edgar Montero. But by the end of it, Bryson Giddes, the outfielder that played with him in the Dominican Summer League, I think was the talk of this international side, not just because of what he was able to do on the backfield, but also what he was able to do with the major league team. I mean, he took Michael King and established, you know, pitcher deep, almost close to 450, 440, you know, to in Peoria, you know, and that was kind of like, whoa, here's this thing going on. And then he had another home run, you know, with in the spring breakout game that went pretty deep. And that was kind of the same thing in the backfields, you know, the way he was able to just take really good at bats and like send them off with high EBs. He's also, you know, a guy that was one and done in the Dominican Summer League and then went on to, you know, didn't repeat or anything like that. He's a year younger than Edgar Montero. I think out of all the players in the A's, I think he has in the A system, I think he has the potential to really jump up. You know, he's skipping the Arizona Complex League along with Montero too. He's skipping the Arizona Complex League and going straight up to low A Stockton, which I think really tills that confidence. I don't think that was the plan heading into the season at all. I think both him and Montero were expected to play in the Arizona Complex League. And after what they saw, you know, I know I've been talking about Giddes a lot, but Montero also had a pretty good, I think those are two guys that are going to be top of the lineup guys for the Stockton Port system coming here. But in speaking with Giddes, I think the plan was for him to be in ACL, and I mean, the bat just kind of swung him out of Arizona. So instead of dealing with 115 degree in the Arizona Complex League, he'll deal with 95 degrees in beautiful Stockton, California, you know? So, I mean, it's going to be
a good position for him. Win-win.
Win-win.
So, I will lead into the next one, which is we want to talk about the organizations, and that's the third. I think there's one other player you want to talk about, but I'll just say that we'll just lay it into this, which is there's an organization whose farm system talent exceeded your expectations. And this may be cheating because this is an organization who's basically their games are being played in your backyard. I mean, this is like the easy commute for you over to the beautiful complex, the upgraded complex at Papago. Best backdrops, I believe, of any spring training backfield back there. But who jumped out and why?
I think, of course, just like similarly to what I talked about on Hot Sheet, and just to be able to kind of the magnitude of how close Papago Park is. I don't have a very strong arm, but as a former soccer player, I believe I could kick a soccer ball into the complex from where I'm at right now. So, I mean, it's beautiful complex, of course. And with that, there's just so much excitement around. And I think seeing the farm system, obviously, I grew up in the Bay Area. I didn't grow up a Giants fan, but I saw the way the farm system, you know, helped the team, you know, that homegrown infield that they have in the early 2010s. Like, it was impossible to be not be a kid in the Bay Area at the time and just seeing the amount of Posey shirts, the amount of Sandoval jerseys, the amount of Crawford jerseys that were just littered around my middle school at the time and just throughout the Bay Area. And I think with that comes a lot of high expectations of like, okay, if the Giants farm system was able to do this in the past, okay, why hasn't it been able to do since? And I think right now the Giants farm system, to be specific, is in a really good position. I mean, they're cooking up with the guys that they've been able to draft, maybe not necessarily in the first round, but a couple of other guys that they, you know, look up to on the other side too, that I'll talk to a little bit, the international side. And also with them having to sell off at the trade deadline last year, they were also able to acquire some pretty good people on the pro side, you know. And I think that's, you know, a testament to scouting involved. I think Michael Holmes is cooking, but I also think Kyle Haynes and the entire, you know, player development system is cooking down there with what they've been able to do. And I think that's just a long form of you saying is that they have arguably, they have a really exciting top five, you know, group. Obviously, when you mentioned, you know, Bryce Elridge, Bo Davidson, Johnny Level, you know, these are established talent that have already been there. But I think the talk of the complex in this case has been both Luis Hernandez and Josuar Gonzalez. You know, obviously, we reported the Luis Hernandez news and got that out here for our followers at baseballamerica.com, which is another reason you guys should subscribe. But we also got that video home run of him just absolutely smacking the crap out of the ball. And you know my favorite saying, JJ, he hit the ball like he owed it money. And at 17 years old, you know, I mean, Hernandez was the crown jewel of the international signing, $5 million. Heading into the season, you know, was playing in a professional Venezuelan league where he was, you know, one of the best hitters in the league at 16 years old, ripping off of dudes who had double A, triple A experience, you know. And I think at the time you could tell, like, there's no way this kid goes through the Dominican Summer League. And obviously he's making a stateside debut. Both him and Josuar Gonzalez, who we'll talk about a little bit too, I mean, are going to be both there developing. And that's just such a great, you know, thing for the Giants to have too. But it's not just those guys throughout the system that we've seen, right? We can talk about Bryce Elridge and the cup of coffee that he's had and going through the real learning pains that go with playing against major league pitching and having to become a better disciplined hitter. But it's also guys like Bo Davidson, who, you know, an undrafted guy out of a JUCO that they were able to find, you know, put his way up as, you know, one of the better hitters last year, kind of has close to as five tool talent as possible with there. And obviously, you know, going to be running through the ringer at that a double A. But it's also, you know, I think Luis Hernandez, Josuar Gonzalez, you know, Johnny Level, I think, is getting overshadowed because of this. And Johnny Level was, you know, probably the best player in the Arizona complex last year that played the entire season. And it's not just them, right? You have a guy like Dakota Jordan, who if the hit tool is going to be able to be able to improve even just 10 grades above, he's going to become a really successful major league hitter with the right approaches. And on the pitching side, it's Jacob Bresnahan, you know, a guy that they got from the Guardians in a relatively, you know, trade for one of their starting pitchers. Kaner Martinez, Luis De La Torre, Arjenis Kayama, these guys from the international sign that they've scouted and signed have kind of gone, you know, to have really, you know, successful first years in the Arizona Complex League. And, you know, each have a profile to play somewhere relatively there. I mean, Trevor Cohen, a guy that, you know, didn't have a lot of hype coming into the draft, you know, was arguably the best performing player from the draft class last year. And top to bottom, you know, it's guys like Carlos Gutierrez, too, another international guy who, if he can remain healthy, has the hit tool, has the speed to be able to become a reliable top of the order bat. Park Schreiber, who they acquired, you know, from the Yankees in the Camilo Duvall trade, a guy who was undrafted out of Georgia, a guy that nobody really knew about. And then you look at the data and he was absolutely mashing the ball in the Yankees system, comes over to the Giants, I think becomes on our hot sheet the very first week he's there. And even guys, you know, on the younger side too, you know, on the complex side, guys like Carlos De La Rosa, who also acquired in the Yankees trade, Alberto La Roche, one of their international guys. You know, the Giants, you know, I think the lower levels right now are going to be good. And I think, you know, this system's going to get better. You know, they lucked into a top draft pick, you know, in the draft lottery. I know they were very, very happy as all of that was transpiring. So, I mean, and regardless of what happens to the season, you know, they play in a tough division. What they do at the trade deadline is going to be really dependent on what happens, you know, with their record and their positioning at the time. If it's, you know, something like last year where they aren't going to make a stretch or anything like that, I mean, they have players to sell out to develop it even more. So, I mean, it's just everything's going in the right direction for the Giants. And I think for a lot of Giants fans, for a lot of people within the system that haven't seen that come up to play, I think it's you know, I'm trying to come up with a desert team, but it's like a Phoenix rising out of Papago Park right now. Like, it's exactly just what's happening.
So that is our look at what was going on in Arizona during spring training as well. We did Florida last week. We're doing Arizona this week. And next week, we will be talking about full bore minor league games at all full season levels. We have AAA going on right now, but you're getting ready for the start of, we're all getting ready for the start of low A, high A, and double A. But before we wrap up today, we also have some news, and I say this, this is truly good news, bad news, you know, which is, Jesus is leaving us. We cannot say yet. We will not say yet what he's going to, but he's leaving for a good reason. He's not leaving. This is not something we would not have Jesus on. You know, this is something where it's leaving for a good opportunity. We'll let him announce that later on. But we also did want to make sure that the you know, our Baseball America podcast, you know, viewers, our YouTube viewers knew as well. We're going to miss him. We're going to miss Jesus. I've it's been fun working with Jesus. It's been fun bouncing around the backfields with you last year. You know, at the same time, and there's, you know, at the All-Star game and all that, but also watching the work you've put in and the way that you've really kind of just, embraced kind of like the backfield life of bouncing around to all around, spring training, all around the complex leagues, all around the Instructs and the Arizona Fall League. But on top of that, also driving our Spanish language coverage, that we do at the site. And also, I think, one of the key things is telling stories of players who by being able to speak in their native language, being able to tell the stories in a way that has been wonderful for Baseball America. Jesus, we've got a couple more weeks here. He's not leaving right now, but we will miss you. And it has also been wonderful to have you, and you will continue to be part of the Baseball America team going forward. We did want to make sure when it happens in a few weeks that people don't go, wait, where did Jesus go? He's leaving, but it's for something quite good. But we are going to miss you, Jesus.
Hey, man, ya tu sabes, jefe. I appreciate that. I appreciate that a lot, JJ. I remember Matt Myers, who was one of the BP accountants at MLB.com and also a former baseball staffer, Baseball America staffer, when I informed him that I was going over to Baseball America. The first thing that told me and has really stuck out throughout this entire process was, you're going to learn so much about baseball that you thought you did, but there's plenty of more things that you don't know. And that's been truly the case, I think, from day one, even from day one of our meeting, looking, you know, obviously doing the studying for our content when I was applying for the position. But at the same time, too, it's like you go out to those backfields and you get exposed to a different side of things. And I've really just enjoyed it. You know, I've been a prospect fan since I was a kid, but I think it's one thing looking at the rankings online and actually being out there and seeing what player development goes through, what scouting goes through, what everything goes to just give these guys one at bat or one inning pitched in the majors. You know, there's so much obviously process in watching them play, scouts, drafting them, developing, all the bus rides, all the sessions, all the lifting sessions, all the backfield games, all the sim games, all the whatever through instructional league, fall league, everything, right? Just for them to be in a position to be able to get one at bat and one inning pitch, I think is truly special. And to, you know, everyone that's followed my work, like, I really appreciate it. You know, I think obviously tapping into the backfield side year round, to be specific, I think was a, you know, foreign territory for BA. And it was a challenge that obviously with my location at the time, because I was still living in Arizona, I used it to my advantage, man. And I'll say this, you know, like at the time, you know, I had just come off of working at MLB.com covering the Diamondbacks, and coming into this role, I thought it'd be a big transition. But in the sense of it, like, I enjoyed so much, you know, stepping onto it. And it didn't matter if it was like 110, 118 degree day, like the day I watched Kendrick Churio play. That was just such an amazing experience, just talking to everybody, interacting with so many people, so many fans, and really getting an understanding for the product. And I'm just so thankful for my time here at Baseball America, not just for working with amazing people like you, JJ, of course, but, you know, Josh, Jeff, you know, everybody on the pro side, Rudd, my guy, Rudd, Jeff, Mark, Eric, you know, I could name everybody on the list so far, Carlos, Ben, you know, Pete, you know, who is no longer with us. He's with the Nationals, not the Mets, but he's with the Nationals now, of course. It's just been such a great experience, and it's going to be something I remember, you know, for the rest of my life. You know, I'm not, without revealing too much about what my next role is going to be, it's not going to be like in scouting or working from a front office team, which I know is kind of some things that Baseball America alumni go on to do. Mine is going to stick within reporting. I'm excited for when that comes out to play, but I'm thankful. I'm going to miss living in Arizona. I'm going to miss being on those backfields. I'm going to miss interacting. I'm going to miss posting the videos, the crack of the bat when a home run goes on, or the reaction from some of the players' teammates when they just have a nasty pitch. I'm going to miss it all, but I think it's really helped me for the next step, and I think in terms of what comes for me next, I think it's going to help take my work to another level. So I just want to say thank you so much for believing in me, but also for believing in the vision with the Spanish website. I've gotten to tell so many stories that I think would have gone untold of. I mean, one of those that comes into mind was the Elaine Gomez Gudino story, which I hope we can find a way to nominate that for award because it could win something for real. To anybody who hasn't checked it out, be sure to check it out because it just really puts into perspective about life and the opportunity that we have here in the United States, regardless of what profession you want to go into, and a lot of sacrifices that, you know, people from outside countries who want to bring in good into their life, you know, want to do to be part of, you know. So thank you so much, JJ. I know it's tough. I don't want to cry or anything like that, but it's tough. This is tough. This was a tough decision regardless of what the next came in, and I'm missing, man. I'm gonna miss it a lot.
Yeah, we're gonna miss you, but at the same time, as I told you when we were talking about this, like, excited for you as well. We are very excited for this opportunity that you have going forward. It's something that you were talking about, like the long-term goals and all, and long-term goals have gotten here sooner than we could have ever even imagined. Just a year and a half ago. So it's very good news. Again, we're gonna miss Jesus, but it is very good news. We have that coming, but again, a couple more weeks still. Not yet. And we'll be welcoming on, unrelated to this, you know, we also had the announcement this week. We had that Ian Kundle is joining the BA staff. He starts actually, as we're recording this tomorrow, as this goes up today.
That's no joke. That's no joke, even if it's on April Fool's.
It is not a joke. This is absolutely true. We're announcing it as we're recording this on March 31st. So this is not part of an April 1st, April Fool's thing. He is coming, again, unrelated to like Jesus departing. These are two unrelated moves, but we're excited to have that, so we'll also have him on as well. But that's where we just want to make sure that everyone knew, you know, where Jesus is going. We will have further on that. But for Jesus, for Josh Norris, I'm JJ Cooper. Thank you for listening to another edition of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast and on our YouTube page as well. And by the way, if you enjoyed this, please do check out baseballamerica.com. It's where we have so much more about this. We're doing all kind of analysis of everything you need to know as the minor league season really gets rolling. We have prospect reports up every day. We have emails, by the way, with that you can check out that will give you also what happened yesterday. We give you a little bit of rundown on the prospect side. I do this one day. Jesus does another. We do that every weekday all season. So check that all out at baseballamerica.com. And so long, everybody.